Go ahead, Johnny.
Testing 1, 2, testing 1, 2. Sibilance. Sibilance.
That's a fun word right there.
It is. I stole it from SNL.
You know, my favorite right now on Facebook is, I don't think that word means what you think it means.
Spoken like a true lawyer.
I'm just quoting an ego, right?
So, you know, my favorite lawyer, I think, in portrayed in media is, I don't know, have you watched any of Community? The main character is a lawyer.
No, I actually haven't. I've missed that train so far.
But he got his degree from Columbia, the country, not Columbia University. So
A little different. A little different.
he has to go back to a community college to get an actual degree.
Whatever works, right? Law school's all a lie anyways. It's the same education, no matter what awesome or rinky-dink law school you go to. You're just paying for the networking.
Exactly. That's what I keep telling Jay. Let's make friends so they can share their famous friends and then put them on our podcast for us.
Right?
Johnny just tells me ABR, always be recording, but that's all he ever tells me. I like
So,
that tie knot. Holy cow. Do you always make such a fancy tie knot?
yeah, so part of my MO is on the naughty pirate, KNOTY, naughty, naughty. And I started tying these kinds of ties because I used to be 400 pounds and I had a 19 and a half inch neck. And I got tired of my blade being like right to my sternum when I tied a tie. So I just went online and there's this whole new way to tie ties with the back of the knot, right? With the small part. And I just started doing it that way. And then, I followed them for a while and then I started creating my own. And when I lost all the weight, I'm like, I'm not gonna stop. So this is my turkey tie. You can see the little goblet right there, giblet, for the turkey.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, Kevin would say he knew you when you were. So we have a mutual friend in Kevin Nielsen, another writer, and he
Yeah,
would.
if we're on the record, I want to make sure that it's known that I came on before Kevin.
It is on the record.
You're the official first novelist, writer, author, all in one.
I didn't have to be the first, but so long as I came before Kevin, that's just awesome.
And he would always say he knew you when you were twice the man you are now. And I was like, well, what does that mean? So he clued me in that you used to be a little heavier.
Oh,
That's
yeah.
funny though. At first I was like, I don't know what he's talking about. I was kind of confused.
It's yeah, everyone all the writers knew me when, but yeah.
So tell us a little bit of, are you cool if we get going? I feel like we've already started.
Oh, yeah, it's whatever. I'm just gonna try to make this more straight so it's not crazy background. Okay, there you go.
So have you read all those books, or is that just part of the lawyer ruse that you have going, you know?
So, you pay $30,000 for those law books that you go into someone's office, and you're paying for them because I'm going to charge you, for years and years as the client. I theoretically the lawyer, but I don't believe in that. So yeah, I've read all these books and I'll just play here. That's Harry Potter at the top and Lord of the Rings, of
I was going to
course.
say, I'm digging your NerdWall. I mean, I'm getting
But
Star Wars, they got DC, a little of everything.
the two there, there at the bottom, those are 99% Utah local writers, and I bet Kevin's book is in there.
Would that be Sands, you think, that's in there? I know he's got a couple.
Yeah, it would be Sands.
Sands is his main one.
But yeah, it's funny because I call it that my shelf of friends.
That's awesome.
So
Someday I'll
yeah.
be on that shelf. It might be a coloring book or a picture book, but I'll be on that shelf.
Yes. So yeah, I do. I've read most of them. There's some Greek Odyssey kind of books back here that I haven't read just yet, but they're references. And then on my shoulder, that's Aragon series right there. So I got the good stuff.
Seriously. Let's just get into it. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about maybe your work life, your home life, whatever you feel
Okay.
comfortable sharing.
That's a dangerous question because I'll just TMI doesn't exist to me, so whatever. But I'm an attorney first and foremost. I do estate planning. I work with small business owners. So any kind of entrepreneur writers fall into that category, and I help them with their estate planning. And because my background is in business law as well, I'll do a lot of contract and negotiation and things that help people avoid problems. You know, one of the best compliments I ever had as an attorney is this big Missouri guy. I started my career in Missouri. You know, big farmer corners me at a chamber of commerce meeting. And he says, "I got a bone to pick with you." I'm like, "What's going on?" He says, "Well, I paid you too much money to set up my business." I'm like, "Okay, why?" And he says, "Well, you know, we did it 3 years ago and I've never had a problem." That's the goal. Thank you. That's the best compliment I've ever received.
It's like when I tell my asthma friends, "I don't even think you have asthma. I've never seen you with any sort of symptom." They're like, "It's because I have the inhaler."
So, yeah. So I work with folks to understand, you know, what trust planning is, what estate planning is, because, you know, we're all trained on what a will is. You know, we watch movies like Knives Out and they're just amazing. And we love the drama, right? Because drama makes good movies. So if wills are in movies that make good drama, maybe wills are not so good for us in real life. You know, we never see movies about trusts because they actually eliminate drama. Wills create it. So it's just a, you know, mindset shift. And I teach people, you know, what's going on and what they should be aware of, what should be on the radar, and how the trust is like, you know, the East India Trading Company in parts of the Caribbean. You know, that's the secret to becoming rich, not the secret to once you are rich. You know, you need to have your corporations and your trusts and your LLCs in place to have a vessel in which to pour the wealth into. And a lot of people miss that step.
So I think you'll find this humorous. My younger sister and I was over at my parents and they were telling us that they had just started a trust. I didn't know you yet. Otherwise I would have recommended you. But I turn to my younger sister and I go, "Oh yeah, we're about to be trust fund kids." And I throw my hand for a high five and she deadpan looked at me and said, "You won't be getting any of it." And I was like, "Oh, you're not a part of this," is what she said. I'm like, "Okay."
All right.
The sad part, it might be true. So we'll see. Knowing her, she's finagled her way. So she's the only one on the trust outside of my parents.
You know, she's the trustee, but let's see who the beneficiaries are. She may be, you know, blowing some smoke.
Right. So what are some of your, well, actually, Johnny, why don't you talk for a minute?
I'm loving the nerd wall that I can see behind you. You got some Star Wars, you got, I want to say Harry Potter above you. There's even a sword when you got high enough. What do you nerd out in? That's what we love to do.
So we nerd out in fantasy. Our home is called the Starford Shire. You know, we have the Bilbo Baggins 111th birthday party tree, lights and all.
No.
We have a broken stone table in our forest of Narnia. We have, you know, I'm going to be building a smile, a hobbit hole in a little hillock out in our backyard. Mm-hmm. We have a Scottish Highland cow, two baby doll sheep, a Tennessee Walker horse, three goats. One's a fainting goat. That's fun. And how many chickens? Like 30 something chickens.
Jeez.
We have a working little hobby farm. And just, you know, the inside of the Shire is, the motif is, you know, castle nerd. You know, we've got a throne that we have it's not the living room. It's the keep.
Nice. Smart.
You know, in my office here, if I turn the camera around, I have a semi library on the other side of the screen. And we have, you know, Horcruxes on display and, you know, my acceptance letter to Hogwarts and, you know, little things like that.
I love it. I'm just disappointed. You know, go ahead, Johnny.
No, that was beautiful.
I'll turn the camera here. You know, see. Let's see it. I even have a plank board map, old world map, just in case I ever like need those planks to float in the ocean. You know, I have them.
And you'll know where to go.
Kind of like the trunks in Joe versus the Volcano. Wherever we go, we'll take these trunks.
You get that reference, Jay?
I did not.
It's a great movie.
You guys are hating yourself right now, you know.
I'll watch anything Tom Hanks does. I do not care.
All day long. So we operate a little shire. I'm allergic to all of it. I'm allergic to all the animals. I married my wife 2 years ago, and our first conversation was about the swords and the axes and the helmets that she had. At our wedding, she presented me with a claymore sword and the crown of Aragon. So I have that on display in the keep.
That's what I keep saying. Marry someone's like in double my collection of nerd stuff.
Right? She really
did. Selling point.
You know, she helped the collection for sure. I write the book. She has, you know, she lives that life. So
beautiful.
It was a match made in heaven.
I kind of feel like maybe you're not a lawyer, but like a secret thief. You know what I mean? That's how you really made your wealth.
Yeah, you know, it all lawyer, thief, pirate, it kind of blends. So I'm really writing from experience, so you know, it works out.
Whether we call you Pierre Despereau, I don't know if you catch this reference, or the Man in Black, both fit.
It works.
Or you can call him Robin Hood if he speaks, but he speaks with a British accent, so they believe him more. All the above.
Yeah, but the real Robin Hoods always talk like Kevin Costner, so they don't have a British accent.
Except for my favorite one.
So when I lost the weight, apparently I now look like Cary Ewis, and I get that a lot. People are like, oh, you look like the Man in Black. I'm like, oh, really? Thanks. But well, it's true.
Stop calling me handsome. Stop it.
The fun, you know, tidbit here is that my wife, who's a movie makeup artist, knows Cary. She's worked with him on several films. And so, you know, she agrees. She's like, yeah, you look like him a lot.
I feel like we've met him now through, you know, through you.
I just need to just, you know, close the circle and meet him myself.
Yeah. We'll take you to a convention with us as our first novelist, and then you'll meet him.
What we need to do is replace you with him, you know, steal his outfit, put it on you, and
just see the
room closet.
Notice.
Yeah.
We're not ashamed to take a screen grab and tag him in it, but with you, so it'll trick people. Be like, no way, you guys are getting so big. Look who you got on your cast.
Yes.
For those who didn't catch, Pierre Despereau is from Psych, and it's played by that character, by that actor, so it's kind of funny. That was what I was trying to shoehorn in. I don't know if you've watched any of Psych or not.
I have, but I don't remember him on it. Was it just like one episode?
It was like four.
He makes her like a reoccurring appearance in the later seasons.
There's like a time in TV history that I just have a blank spot. It's pretty much when I was at law school.
So. I was going to say, you're probably in school.
So now that we've kind of covered some of your personal life, let's talk about your writing career a little bit, or just like writing in general. Maybe some of what led you to become a writer, your journey overall, and then tell us about some of the books you've published and worked on.
Okay. So, well, my earliest memory of wanting to be a writer is seventh grade, sitting in the back of the class, hating the English class, but just loving the creativity and, you know, I was writing a play with this kid, you know, in the seventh grade, and I always wanted to be a writer. Got into college, did the English degree, and realized really quick that I was headed down this path of being a poor writer and wasn't so excited about that. So I had some mentors along the way that were attorneys, and I'm like, well, maybe if I did the law school thing, and then I could do the writing thing, be like Grisham. And oddly enough, I have not, well, I've actually stayed away from courtroom scenes. So, you know, I actually wrote a paranormal romance. That was my third published book. But I don't speak of it because I pulled it off the shelves. You know, I want to do some work on that one. Cause it's a series, it's a 10 series book romance. And every book is a new couple, but they're all same world, same rules apply, and they're all interrelated, you know. So if I got a couple in one and the next one, maybe it's the distant cousin, they're somehow connected, and it all, the arc of the whole series comes out in book 10. So it's a fun project, but it's on the back burner right now, like most writing projects are. Right. So like I said, I always wanted to be a writer, and got out of law school, you know, dove headfirst into all that, getting established. And it wasn't until about 2010 when I said, you know what, I should probably make good on this. So I was running for judge, And the night before the election, I found out that there was this writing group in this little town that I was living in, Montgomery City, Missouri. And so I'm like, I'm going to that. You know, it doesn't matter. Tomorrow's the election. I'm going to this writing group. So all these old, you know, I wouldn't call them older, but, you know, the average age of the participants was 70. And so I show up and they're all really upset with me. And I had no idea why. And they thought it was just like a political stunt that I was there to get their vote. I'm like, no, I really want to be a writer. So I actually had to like prove myself for a period of months before they like, oh, he's actually going to stick around. But I started writing Fog of Fortune. It was my son's bedtime story. You know, living in Missouri, you drive a lot. You drive to work, you drive to church, you drive everywhere, and long distances, at least half an hour. And so I would listen to books on tape, come home at night and serialize what I'd listened to for his bedtime story. And one of those books was Treasure Island. So when we finished, he says, tell me another pirate story. And I said, there are no more pirate books in the library. That was it. He says, I don't care. Tell me another one. So I'm like, all right, well, you liked Long John Silver, Jonathan Edwards is our pirate's name. We're going to tell you a story about Jonathan Edwards, but you know, that doesn't strike fear into the hearts of men. So John Silver, Silver Sword. Jonathan Edwards, Captain Silver Sword. And, you know, this really awesome Darth Vader of pirates was born. And we just started telling that story. And I started writing it and really developing it. And it wasn't until 2013, went to a Thanksgiving holiday in Florida, just sitting on the beach. I'm like, all right, beach is my muse. Gonna type this thing out and get it written, and wrote it in about a week. Just got it done and came to Utah in 2014. I submitted it to the League of Utah Writers. Just, you know, why not? You know, I'm new to Utah, new to the writing scene. And I'm at their banquet and it won Young Adult Manuscript for the year. So that was kind of like, ooh, I'm excited now. And I had some contract offers, but, you know, being the attorney I am, I didn't like any of them. And now that I had, you know, an established writing institution say that my book was the best of the year for a young adult, I'm like, I can self-publish this thing. So I pulled it back from the contracts that were offered and self-published it. And actually put it out on Halloween of 2014.
So how many words is the book, roughly?
About 80,000.
Okay, that's for a week. Holy cow. I can't believe you wrote that in a week.
I write pretty fast. I went to a writer's retreat and got 40,000 words over the weekend. So, you know, it's all in your head, right? You've just been working it out and then playing with it, and you just got to barf it onto paper. Now, wrote it in a week, but I, you know, edited it for a year and a half before.
Right.
Before it was ready to, you know, be seen.
Right. I've heard revision is like brutal, that you can get something. So did you plot it out all in your mind, or are you a free writer? Like you just write and you find it as you go?
So for that book, I was just a free writer. Now I'm kind of in between, a little bit of both. I like to know the genre I'm writing. I like to be very familiar with the product, the end product that I want to give. So if it's a young adult, if it's an adult, if it's, you know, paranormal romance, whatever I'm writing to, or, you know, even I have a book on divorce out there. So that's self-help professional. And each one has a different word count, you know, that you're going to want to hit. And each one has a different kind of feel to it. But when I'm writing my fiction, I want to know my word count. I want to know the chapters that I'm going to have, like roughly 40 somewhere in there. And then I'm going to take my main characters and storybook them out. So chapter one is going to be about these two characters, chapter two, chapter three, chapter four. So I know who I'm going to talk about in each chapter, but I don't know what's going to happen, because if I do, I'm not going to write it because I'm bored. I want to be surprised too. This is just as much for me as it is for the reader. So, you know, entertain me, myself, right? And writing is the only profession really that you pay us to hear the voices and you don't commit us. Like, no, hear those voices, let them come. And it's pretty fun.
That's awesome. I was reading here a little bit about, yeah, cause we do research opposed to what Jay says. I do a little research. It said that you have a little dyslexia. to know how bad it is. And it helped me with it. This is really cool because I have mild dyslexia and it irritates me and numbers are backwards. And I'll text Jay and he'll be like, what is this? I'm like, oh, sorry. I got to reread what I text. So it's really cool to see someone who had that and used it as a perk because you pushed through it.
Yeah, you know, I was never diagnosed in school. Mm-hmm. And I just knew I was really bad at standardized tests and I had no idea why. And then I went and took the LSAT for law school and I took all the classes and whatnot. And then I went and took the test and I did horrible. And I was just like crushed. I'm like, well, I guess I'm back to being a poor writer. But I was talking with someone in the conversation and they're like, you might have dyslexia. Have you ever thought about that? Blah, blah, blah. And so they sat me down with a course that taught me how to speed read with, you know, a pen or my finger. Mm-hmm. And I took, at that time, it was Lord of the Rings had just come out. You know, the book was out again because of the movies, mm-hmm. Or the first one, you know, Fellowship. So I grabbed the book, you know, it has, you know, Elijah Wood on the front cover and whatever. That was new to me at the time. And I read Lord of the Rings in the speed reading fashion because I was familiar with the story. Mm-hmm. And went into the test again. And I increased my score by 12 points. Which then they thought I was cheating because that's somewhat impossible. I'm like, no, I just was able to read your stupid test fast enough to get the right answers. You know, it was my reading issues. It was my dyslexia. And so now I professionally edit. I've edited several books. I do content editing. I'm not really so fond on online editing because it's the minutia of it. But I'll sit down and help someone organize their book, organize their thoughts, you know, because narrative is narrative. You know, you can watch it in the media right now. You know, a narrative is being portrayed, and in court it's the same way. You know, when I talk to a jury, I'm not going to tell you A, B, C, D. You know, those are facts. I'm going to say Z, F, A, Y, Z, and I'm going to tell you that in a story that's going to evoke an emotion that I need you to have. That's no different in storytelling. That's no different in movies. That's no different in the media. It's all the same. As long as you understand that, you're not lying. You're telling the truth, but you're telling it in a way that you're going to evoke an emotion that you want to achieve. And so that's what we're doing in my editing when I'm helping other people understand that. And that's what I'm doing in my writing.
Amazing. I like it. I like that a lot. It helps us too. Cause ever when we do stuff like skits or even video games, it's like an emotion that you don't expect from nothing. That's not even tangible. And it just makes you feel. So I've been liking that a lot. And then I like that too, because I've been listening to a lot of audiobooks. And so if I listen to it and then I read it, that helps my dyslexia a lot. So I like that. I like your speed reading. I'm going to try that.
But I listen way more than I read for that reason. It's just uncomfortable because, you know, I have to stop and reread it and mm-hmm. stop and read it.
Yeah.
Again. I can just listen to it and have it in like 2.0 speed and be done. It's fantastic. Even when I edit, I have Word read it to me.
Oh, cool. See, I like that. Yeah.
So, you know, I've just created systems that allow me to not be hindered by that.
What are, besides Treasure Planet, do you have some favorite writers or favorite books or things that really inspired you over the years?
So, you know.
And Lord of the Rings, we also hit that.
Old school, C.S. Lewis, you know, that was my first love. And then I didn't like reading because of the dyslexia. So, you know, the first two books that I read for pleasure were Jurassic Park, Michael Crichton, and Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Yeah.
And I read those because I'd seen the movies, so I could work through them. And it wasn't until college and this awareness of the dyslexia that I'm like, oh, I can enjoy reading again. And so, you know, I came late to the game, you know, so I've never read Robert Jordan. I've never read who took up Robert Jordan? Brandon
Sanderson.
And don't tell him that. But I haven't read Brandon yet. And it's not because I don't want to. It's just I'm late in the game. But I really enjoyed the Harry Potter series. You know, anything fantasy that I can just jump into and get into that world. C.S. Lewis, the Aragon series. I was really disappointed with the movie, but the books are pretty great. And then, you know, things like, you know, Wrinkle in Time, you know, anything that can just start getting your mind thinking and be a little bit different, a little bit off. I'm very influenced by, Princess Bride. Everything I write has some kind of Dread Pirate Roberts theme in it. Like with Log of Fortune, the question is, if a pirate doesn't take any prisoners, leave any witnesses, or show any mercy, how do you know about him? I mean, is he truly following his creed, or has he got some Dread Pirate Roberts thing going on?
Mm-hmm. See, I love that, because we have an inside joke that I always do where I'm like, I don't read the book till I see the movie. And Jay always thinks I'm kidding, but I'm like, it's kind of true. Like, until if I know a basis, if I know how to pronounce a name, it's a lot more enticing for me to read a book after.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan. I've never read the Silmarillion because those names would just hurt my head. But it just came out on Audible.
So it's kind of funny when you're talking about Robert Jordan and stuff. I know I've talked to Nielsen about this, but my idiot friend decided to suggest Robert Jordan to me, saying it was the best series he's ever read. Well, it took me a whole year to get through it, and I really enjoyed it. But, like, I feel like it was so much time. Like, it's kind of funny to hear you talk, like, being late to the game. Like, I don't think you're that late, because I feel like I wasted – not wasted, but I feel like that thing took years of my life away. It was so bad.
There's a lot. So, you know –
Well, I didn't know it going into it. I thought it was just a couple books, like a trilogy. And so here I am, two books in, and I'm like, wait, there's 13 books?
Absolutely. And then there's books that I just can't read, like the print, like Atlas Shrugged, love it to death. I read it almost every once a year, but always listen to it because I just can't get through it.
Oh, I was going to ask, do you like To Kill a Mockingbird, just as a lawyer?
Yeah, it's actually one of the most authentic books for, you know, and the movie too. You know, when you get into the actual courtroom, they spend a lot of time, just making sure that, I mean, the courtrooms that I practiced in Missouri felt like that. You know, it was really, you know, it gives me goosebumps to see that movie. And, yeah, good book, really good one. I haven't read the whether that's hers or not hers, you know, the second book, The Watchtower.
I haven't either. I've read To Kill a Mockingbird, I think, 3 or 4 times now, but that one I never cared to read. I think we're coming towards the end. Are we still doing good on time? Can we take another 5 minutes from you?
I'm fine.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, because we have an inspiring writer. You know, just kidding, it's Jay. So we
the kids are just waiting for me to watch Discovery tonight because we're Star Trek nerds too.
Oh, yeah. I keep telling them Picard is worth getting the CBS access pass because I love Jean-Luc Picard is my favorite one.
Picard was great.
And, yeah, and
I loved it. And then I went back and rewatched Voyager and it made more sense.
Okay, yeah.
Voyager was a waste of time until it helps you understand Picard. And now it's
right? useful again. Yeah, that's what my friend told me too. He was a big Trekkie, and he's like, no, go back to it after finishing this. Because I was like, Picard killing people this age. Like, no, it'll just make more sense. And it really does.
I actually liked Voyager this time through because Picard now is bookending it.
There you go.
So the last two things I want to hit, I want to do a little bit of advice with you. I would like to ask you a couple questions as an aspiring writer. And then two, I just want to talk about, like, if you have any involvement with Dragon Con, Comic Con, any of that stuff, like any of the nerd kind of writing cons and media cons. But do you care which one we do first?
No.
Okay. Let's do advice first real quick. So I was going to ask, how do you, especially with your dyslexia, how do you give each character their voice? I realize that's kind of a silly question, but I feel like sometimes I fall into the trap of having one character sound like another character. How in your brain do you kind of distinct them while you're writing?
So a lot of writers, I don't do necessarily to the degree that others do, but they'll create a character Bible and you know, they'll have a picture of them in their mind. They'll steal a picture off the internet. They'll write a backstory. They'll do some things like that. What I like to do is put the pieces together. You know, every first chapter, there's 5 things that when I edit, it should always have. It should have a great hook, you know, a reason to read it. It should have a good main character and we should be introduced to them really quickly. It should have some kind of a secondary character that's bouncing off the main character so we can get a little bit of relationship going and understand what's going on. Setting is super important. And then finally, we need to have some tension. It doesn't have to be the main tension of the book, but we just need to feel some urgency for something going on. And if we have those things going, then the characters start writing themselves. And I was writing my book right now that's with the editor. It's called Uncommon. It's a medieval magical world where only women have magic, but the magic's in an apostate form. Like the women are using it for pretty things and magical dresses, but they've lost their queen and so their guidance, and they're not using the magic for balance, you know, between the mystical and the human world. And so things are in disarray. And in that book, it's in a 16-year-old female's perspective, first person present tense. You know, I wrote it because someone challenged me, and like, all right, challenge accepted, Barney Stinson style. And I quickly found that I am not a 16-year-old girl, nor do I think like one. So I had to join a lot of writing groups with women in it so I could get into the women, you know, female headspace. And my first critique of that character was, I hate your character. I want her to die. I'm like, okay, not so great feedback, because if she's dead, the story's over and I'm done. But it was that secondary character. When I rewrote the chapter and introduced a secondary character to bounce things off, she became alive and she became real. So that helped a little bit. And then I did actually a Myers-Briggs exercise with Valerie's, the character. And you just start listing off things, you know, like the character Bible, you know, what she looks like, what she sounds like, what she talks like. And then you start interviewing in your head. And this is where the voices come in. Like, she started talking to me during this process, and she chewed me out. Like, she's like, why do you think I'd ever do that? I wouldn't do that. Stupid. You're dumb for even making me think I would do that. And, you know, she set me straight, and I went back in and made those character changes, adjustments, and went back to the same critique group. And now it's just all praise, and we love this character, and oh my gosh, it's night and day different. And it's, you know, you just each, you know, back to the original question of, you know, how you make the character voices different. You really got to see them. You got to feel them. You got to fall in love with them. Like, you know, Captain Silversword, this is probably a bad thing for me to say because, you know, it shows that I'm evil or something. I love this guy. And I had to write the protagonist, Sam, like rewrite, serious rewrite 3 times to get him up to the level of what Silversword was from the beginning. I'm like, I just have like all my evil pouring out into this guy. And you know, I'm not good enough to have Sam, you know, level up to him.
I love that. All right. My other question is about dialogue. When you describe like a setting or a scene, do you like to have it evolve through what people are saying? Like someone says, look at the size of that whale. It just capsized a ship. Or do you want to say the giant whale came over and capsized the ship? Like, dialogue for me is kind of one of those things where, or setting up a scene, I don't really know how I want to do it sometimes, if I want to describe it or let it be described through my characters. So I was kind of curious if you had some thoughts on that.
So dialogue is always amazing. Like, I always defer to dialogue unless it's just a talking head. You know, if you just have two things going back and forth and and we can be really guilty of that a lot in our dialogue, and first draft dialogue is always that way. But, you know, dialogue is it makes it real. We're in their head without being in their head. So we can maintain the POV that we've set out, but we can be hearing things, you know, in real time, what's going on in their head, and also be clued into their perspective, their world. So yeah, if you can achieve in dialogue and achieve that emotion and that tension and that, you know, the relationship that's going on between whoever's saying the dialogue, if it's just being said to be said, you know, maybe you can say it a different way. But I'm a real believer in word economy, and, you know, you can say a very impactful, important thing in less than spending, you know, Charles Dickens paragraph after paragraph after paragraph, and, you know, or, you know, Michener describing Hawaii from a universal standpoint. That's, you know,
yeah,
we can do better.
Totally. Okay. Thank you, Johnny. Take us into cons.
You got it. Yeah. You've done
more cons than I have. So ask questions.
No. Yeah. Is there cons you go to? There's the local Fanex. I know they have local writers. They have, do you ever attend those? Do you go to those?
Yeah. So I've been at several Fanexes, or whatever we call them, The name keeps changing, right? So I've been on several panels there. I'll go to the Storymakers for writers. I'll go to LTUE. I've done a lot of things there. Let's see, some of the big ones. FireCon is one that's a newer one, but it's put together really well from really good organizers. So I'm excited for the future of that one. Yeah, if there's a con and I can travel to it, I'm usually there.
That's beautiful.
What do you like about the Comic-Cons? Like, what draws you there?
So my first one, again, I was late to the game. my first one was in Salt Lake 4 or 5 years ago. And I had my kids with me, and at the time they were 11 and 9, so a little young. And I was with Johnny Worthen. I don't know if you've met him yet. He's a great local writer, very powerful writer. And he, I'm new to the game. I don't know anybody, and he needed somebody to help him in his booth when he was at panels. And so he's like, "Hey, you can sell your fucking fortune book and cover the booth while I'm gone." And I'm like, "Okay, I'll be your little." I'll be your servant as you wish, right? I'll be Wesley. But it got me in the con, right? That was my first experience, and the kids were with me, and I was just blown away. You know, I was always a football player, you know, and you'd be in a stadium, and half the stadium hates the other half of the stadium. And don't get me wrong, football players are cosplayers, you know, or fans. They're cosplayers. They dress up, you know, they just don't realize it's the same universe. So I went to this Comic-Con, and there's like 100,000 people there, and everyone loves each other. Oh my gosh, I love your costume. And it's like $5 costume or $5,000 costume. It didn't matter. It was just like the biggest love fest that I've ever experienced in a non-sexual way. And, story on 11. But I felt safe. I felt safe to let the kids just go, you know, meander and go to a panel and come back. And like, I didn't expect that at all. And so, you know, between the excitement of the crowd and, you know, the love for fantasy and then all things con that was going on, it was refreshing almost to say, hey, look, there's a whole pot of humanity that are here and love each other. And there's just no negativity going on. I really, really appreciated that.
Yeah, the fandom is always beautiful. I tell Jay, it's a crazy experience just to turn your head and you'll meet someone, and no matter who it is in that stage, you'll have something in common. Doesn't matter what it is. You'll find it in 2 seconds.
Yeah. And it's just, it's refreshing in day and age where hate is. So missed the con quite a bit this year. Last year I went as the Dread Pirate Roberts. Cause you know, when you write a pirate book, you kind of damn yourself for all eternity to go to cons as pirates to sell your book. It's really fun to ride the tracks to downtown in my full get up. Either my pirate get up or my Man in Black get up, and people are looking at me. I'm like, yeah, I wrote a pirate book.
And yes, I look like him. I'm ready for a picture. Get in on this.
let's do this.
Well, that's awesome. So for all our knights out there, that's what we call our fans, knights. Fog of Fortune, right? From Michael S. Glassford. And we can get them on Amazon. You can get it everywhere.
Yeah, it's on Amazon.
Amazon, beautiful. Me and Jay are stoked about it. And I like pirate books, so I'm excited to see a fun one. And you did write, I read it here, that you just want to put a smile on someone's face. And I can tell you right now, you put a smile on our face. So we enjoyed the convo.
Oh, cool. Well, thanks. Yeah, that's my mantra. You know, smile. I put it on all my propaganda, so to speak. Even in the legal field, if they can't smile with me or mm-hmm. find their smile because of me, I'll probably pass on the case.
Beautiful.
Do you prefer Kindle or paperback if we were to read your book?
It's reading is you know, in the eye of the beholder. So if you enjoy a paperback, if you got to hold that book, then you do that. Like right now, my jam is Audible. I don't even want to touch it. I want to hear it.
Love it.
Right, but you told us not to use Audible, right? On Fog of War. I mean,
Fog of War. Then?
Thank you. Sorry.
That's okay. Yeah, they're part when I released Fog of Fortune, I was like, oh, like, you know, I can do this and make a ton of money. You know, I can separate the book into two and make $2.99 on two books, which is one, rather than just $2.99 on the one book, right? I was like, marketing genius. And so I separated part A, part B, and I went out and hired a voice actor for part A, and I loved his voice. Didn't like the characterizations so much. And so we didn't recontract for part B. And then I went back and retooled the whole book anyway. So the Audible part A is a little bit different than the now current version of Fog on Amazon.
Okay. I'll do paperback then for this.
Lesson learned, right?
Yeah.
Well, one day I'm going to go and voice it myself. So why not?
Even I was going to say, I like your voice, and I'd get it on paperback anyway, just to put it on my nerd wall. Cause it means more to us. Like, when you come to us and talk, like, we consider you friends already. Do we have a we like to, if you come on, we W master. Jay, do you have a master for master him?
Pirates for me.
Yeah, I love it. The master of pirates himself.
Excellent. Yeah, so that'll be your title from now on. We never repeat titles, so pirates is forever yours. For the master cat. Pirates. Even if we someday get huge, you'll always be the master of pirates. Even if we meet, I don't know, who's a famous pirate? Johnny Depp. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like the tomfoolery of pirates. Yeah. So he doesn't get
he doesn't really count.
How about Barbossa? Played by, oh shoot, now I can't. Guys, my names are off today. I'm sorry. Normally I'm like Rain Man with names, but today I'm not. Geoffrey Rush does Barbossa, and that's probably my favorite pirate portrayal in any media.
Yeah, he's a fantastic pirate. I like the guy that plays Davy Jones too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he's in Harry Potter as well. I don't know if you knew that. He's the minister.
Prime Minister.
Yeah.
I have a whole legal series about how that sucks. Dumbledore is a huge gambler by leaving, you know, magical items in a will. Don't even get me started.
Should have been a trust.
Absolutely.
And Harry should have been the, what did you call it? The trustee?
The beneficiary.
Oh, the beneficiary. There you go.
There's no guarantee that those items were going to get to the kids in a will. Because, you know, what if there wasn't enough money in the estate and those items had to be sold to pay for the attorneys and the world was damned because, you know, we didn't get the freaking stone, you know, resurrection stone that, you know, that he just dropped in the grass. I was always disappointed with that.
I really like where this conversation went at the end.
I love it. It's when nerdy meets legal and you're like, no.
Oh, I claim my nerd, you know, and the more you claim it, the more happy you are, right?
It's true. He went full nerd.
Love it.
Oh, this is me all the time. Yeah. Give me a challenge and it'll come out.
That's so funny. Oh, I was going to, nope, that's it. That's all I got. I was going to say I had one other pirate I liked, but I don't know if you're going to hate it or not. It was Muppet Treasure Island. I really like the guy who plays, he played Pennywise. I'm, like I said, today's not my day for names.
I remember him being good, but I can't think of his name either.
He's in Home Alone 2. I can't remember his stinking name. He's awesome though. But yeah, no, Muppet Treasure Island. I'm sure that's one that you hopefully enjoy.
We'll have to, yeah. Actually, Muppet Treasure Island is probably one of the better versions of Treasure Island.
It really is. It's so bad.
You know, then you get in the Treasure Pilot Planet and you're just like...
That was horrible, yeah. I just rewatched that on Disney Plus and I couldn't finish it. I was like, that's right, I didn't like this.
No. Treasure Island's it's one that they don't do it well most of the time. and it's because, you know, it's a pirate story. Like, you know, one of the best pirate things out there is Black Sails, but it's like so porny nasty that you like if they would have just stuck to the pirate stuff, it's amazing. And you know, just to see those characters, and that's Treasure Island prequel, to see them come alive and to see them interacting, those are some good pirates there. Those actors did a really good job.
I love it. Well, we'll let you go. I will be reading your book, and Johnny will be having it on his wall until the movie comes out.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Or Jay can read it to me, either way.
My wife will wake up to me whispering in a microphone. Johnny's on the other line.
Well, you know, whatever works, right? Yeah, I have a friend that that's in the book. Chad Pritchard is a restaurant owner and chef down in Provo. And for a while, we were business partners, and I owned a regular Italian kitchen with him. But I made a pact with him that he would always be in all of my pirate books. And he's like Kenny in South Park. He always dies. So he's, he's a minor character. He's a secondary character. He's a chef on the ship. And Chef Pritchard in every book dies. And I don't explain why he's back or, you know, he's just there, and he dies again. But he's not gotten past page 8 in, you know, 6 years. So it's okay.
Love it.
I will, however, read it. Here's the thing. If I buy it and if I read it, I'm going to give you an honest critique. So that's kind of like, if I don't do that, then I feel like I need to just say, oh, it's so great. But if I have spent money on it, I'm like, no, I'm going to tell you what I think about it. Whether I
tell me, and then, you know, book two is written, and I'm just waiting for, you know, the motivation to put it out.
Jay will be knocking at your door. Drop the second one. I need more.
So my wife read book two, and there's something going on in that. And she's like, what's going on in this? And I'm like, I honestly don't remember because I wrote it in 2014. And then I just let her breathe. And she's like, you got to tell me. I'm like, I don't know. What do you want?
That's amazing.
So yeah, it is a three-part series. So eventually one, two, and three will come out. And the reason for the stall is because I self-publish it, and this is something that, you know, aspiring writers need to know, self-publishing is great if you have product, if you have a lot of books. You know, if you just self-publish one book, you're not going to make any money on that. And so I didn't make a lot of money with Fog of Fortune, you know, even though people like it. There's a lot of good books out there that no one will ever read on Amazon because, you know, they publish so many books. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like 5,000-6,000 books a day. So in that regard, it wasn't the best to just throw it out there, self-publish it. It was great for me because it put me on stages and, you know, in writing conferences and being able to speak about the book or about any topic really, because I was an author. That opened a lot of doors, both in the legal career and in the writing career. So don't regret it, but it did put a damper on writing, finishing two and three, because I can't traditionally publish two and three. Those are forever self-published. So, you know, other projects get priority because I can start again and go hybrid and go with a publishing house on something else.
Excellent.
So, get behind the scenes. I like that.
Yeah, we took you past time. I'm thinking on this. Sorry, I was saying 3:45, and it always, especially
just having fun, right?
Yeah, when we get someone that listens to us, we're like, hey, we're gonna hold this guy. We need another friend. Let's keep talking. Yeah.
And when it's just like we want more, I want more information. Like I get captivated, and all of a sudden we're an hour into the cast, and I'm like, holy cow, I'm so sorry, I just took your night. But we really appreciate it. This was really good, especially as an aspiring writer. I'm 70,000 words into my first book, needs a ton of work. But stuff like this to me just like means so much. So thank you so much for being on.
No problem, Jay. And when Thanks you're ready, time, send yeah. it over. We'll do thank the edit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm feeling like I need to have some sort of reference to a lawyer in it now, you know, something like that. I don't know if he'll die in every one of my books, but
pirate seedy lawyer. That's just really like Call Saul kind of guy.
Pirate seedy lawyer. Yeah, exactly.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Michael. And hopefully we'll see you in cons 2021. That's what we keep telling ourselves.
I'm here. Yep. Okay.
All right, nice. We will see you on the flippity flop.